Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, D-Aliens, and a happy Thirsty Thursday to you. This is Mraz, the executive producer of the DA Show, sidekick on the DA Show. Heck, host of Side B on the PGP on the DA Show. And more importantly, you might be more stunned to a news that here I am, still pumping out the best of the DA shows. And today, plenty more laughs, plenty more takes, and plenty more nonsense across the DA. Check it out here.
I do want to tip my cap to the PGA Tour, to NASCAR, who was first, to soccer, whether it be European or even the MLS. They have been tremendous filler at a time I needed to see competition. But today, Bogish, today, our first of the four major sports is back for real, competitive, not scrimmages, not preseason games. We get real baseball with a doubleheader later this evening. The Yankees and Nets, the Giants and the Dodgers, and then tomorrow, ooh, like dessert after Thanksgiving, you take a big hunk and bite out of all the other teams kicking off the Major League Baseball season. And here we are, Bogish. It is opening freaking day.
And this is the grand experiment. All those other leagues and organizations and sports have done a great job living their kind of new life here. But baseball is unlike any other because we're moving around. We're in every part of the country. We've got much more interaction between all the players in the game, on the same team, in the opposition. And again, moving, crisscrossing, taking God knows what germs from here to there. So, you know, this is now really our next huge step in figuring out how to do all of this in the current situation before we get to football in the fall or the winter or the spring. You know, baseball sets the next example because they have upped the ante by not being in a bubble, not completely controlling their environments. You know, they're doing everything as close to normal as possible, with the obvious exception of the fans not being there and all the crazy rules involved. But again, except for those empty seats, this is baseball and the way baseball would normally be played. So if we can do this right, and baseball certainly at the moment is trending in the right direction medically and scientifically and safe and healthy protocol ways, you know, this, if they can do this, it's a good sign, fingers crossed, for everything else that we want to happen later this year.
That is the perfect segue. So just to let you know, later on in the show, Bob Nightingale, USA, longtime senior MLB writer, covers baseball great there. He is going to join the show as we preview opening day. Bogish and I will each make kind of a wacky prediction for a 60-game season, couple over-unders. We still have, obviously, the NFL making their big mask announcement to get to. We saw the NBA play some scrimmages yesterday. Plenty to set the table to on the show, but it's just Bogish just alluded to. Is this the next turning of the page? Will this work? Are you excited? Baseball's back. It's opening day. It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
Doesn't matter how many times, how many years you've been in this. When you get an opening day and you're playing on opening day, that's always special. It doesn't matter if you're first or you're last. It's the start of baseball. It's been too long without baseball, so it's pretty cool that we're the first ones to go.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, Grundy.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
And you hear it there from Max Scherzer, Bogish. The players that do want to play, I am sure there is a ton of excitement and a ton of giddiness. They've now been around their team for about 3 weeks or so. They've even played some exhibition games, which I guess probably made them feel somewhat at ease. But I'm sure there are many players still with that skepticism of, oof, we're really out here playing during a pandemic. But hey, here they are. They're collecting paychecks as a audience from a mental health standpoint. We get some form of regularity, at least on television, if you're a sports fan. And as much as I said I credited all those other sports, look, summertime is baseball time. And for these last 5-6 weeks of a summer that has flown by, and maybe some of us don't even realize has begun, here we are and we get baseball on our TV. Of course, you cannot enter this season without feeling a little bit skeptical. Bogus, they did not go with the bubble plan like basketball did, like hockey did. So you will have players crisscrossing all over the place. And we're going to get to the Jays in a little bit as well. But you had an entire country saying, we don't trust this plan. So it's going to happen. Baseball players in and out of cities every 3 days, every 4 days, in some cases every 2 days. And you hope all that zigzagging and crossing paths doesn't cause spikes in clubhouses or this, that, and the other thing. But they're going to give it a whirl. I think they're going to find a way to prevail and find a way to push through, especially with expanded rosters. And we're going to get a good 60-game sprint in. It's going to lead to, I think, some weird things, some wild things. I think there will certainly be a playoff team or two or three that maybe would not have made it in a 162-game season. But look, everybody's playing these 60 games. So it's away we go. But overall, Bogus, I have this morning woken up more excited, more, wow, this is really awesome, this is really refreshing, than I am, oh no, I hope this works. So I don't know where you stand on that.
Well, I mean, I am, what I'm optimistic about is that this began when players showed up for summer camp earlier this month. The testing situation was in disarray. Remember, we had teams canceling practice because they didn't know what their results were. And we had guys kind of threatening to go home because the testing was out of whack. The A's missed a day because tests were sitting in an airport because nobody accounted for the 4th of July being a holiday and the mail system not working down. So it was embarrassing at the beginning. Since then, they have gotten their you-know-what in order. There have been none of these logistical issues, and there have been very few positive tests. So that makes me optimistic. And across the board, that seems to be the trend now between MLS and NBA and hockey and baseball, that the theoretical bubble, whether it's as legitimate as Disney or whether it's all these individual baseball bubbles around the country, the bubbles do seem to be working. The one thing, and this is to me, I know you might shrug your shoulders, like this is not doom and gloom, this is just reality, is we can only do so much. Like the virus still right now is better than any plan, and the virus still can dictate how we go about things, and people outside the bubble can mess things up and create situations. I mean, part of the reason why Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania said no to the Blue Jays is because they've had a spike in that general area of Pennsylvania going towards Ohio, and they don't want any more people coming in through the area. So the rest, everybody on the outside can still mess things up. So I think they're going in the right direction. But at the end of the day, my one hesitation will always be, you can have, in theory, the perfect plan, and it can be going well for days, weeks, or months, and then just like with a snap of a finger, things can change, and maybe a team can't play in its city anymore, or even a more significant change than that. That's always on the horizon. There's no relaxing here or anything like that. But today, things look good, and today's a day to sit back and enjoy at least the first game, because I'm going to be asleep by 10 o'clock, so Godspeed to the Giants and the Dodgers tonight.
I'll make it to the first pitch. 855-212-4227. That number again is 855-212-4CBS. And on that note, a report that broke later on last night, Bogus, which I cannot believe, but I guess I will believe. It is from John Heyman. And look, John Heyman has obviously been a source of a couple of our jokes around here, him and DA going at each other on MLB Network. Full transparency. John's done a good job for a long time, but there are moments I read some John Heyman reports that have frankly, you know, blown up maybe back at his face and proved to not be as accurate as maybe he thought from his sources. That being said, he tweets last night that the MLB and MLBPA last second are making a push to expand the postseason, are having discussions, and it has to be decided before first pitch later tonight between the Yankees and Nats, because once the season begins, your rules are in place, and that's it. So, Bogus, let me just start here with this news. What, I mean, did we not go through enough with the MLB and MLBPA trying to figure things out. Why on earth is there any reason to even bring anything like this to anybody's attention and rock the boat? We're good as fans with having the five teams. I know you want to make that revenue as an owner, but we're good. Why even go down this mad rush of 24 hours where, to me, more arguments can happen than any good can happen in the CBA?
Well, so in general, I don't need playoff expansion. I'll take it this year because it gives us an extra wrinkle of drama. It gives a handful of extra games when the regular season is over. I think it gives teams a little more wiggle room for some issues here. You can survive a bad stretch or a bad injury for a couple of weeks and still have that extra level, that extra layer of playoff games. So I'm not against it for this tiny season. I'm just so confused by how this all happened. Like, was a guy in the union and a guy at MLB headquarters just like G-chatting about nothing? And then all of a sudden, like on Monday, we're like, you know what would be really cool? What if we like expand the play? That was a good idea a couple of weeks ago. Why don't we rethink that? And now they're in this sprint to get it done before first pitch tonight. So I don't hate the idea. I just need to know the timeline of all of this and why we're doing it now and not like 10 days ago, once everybody was kind of settled in the summer camp and we were just killing time until real games. They could have had these conversations then, not today.
So, a couple things. Number one, I will disagree with you in that it creates more drama. I think the more drama is having the five-team playoffs with a 60-game season and then wondering, oh my goodness, is a team going to miss out and seeing them try to dash at the last second? I think the eight teams throws them that life raft of you assume all the good teams will get in. And maybe that's what baseball wants. Number two, usually no good happens when you have basically 24 hours to figure something out and cram it. I can only compare it to my college days where I would have a week to write a paper and I would go that last day, all right, I got 12 hours, let me crank this out. And the result, as you can imagine, would never be good with the grade.
Let's make a rule. Let's not compare anything to your educational career, because I don't know that your educational career and decisions are a good comparison for anything else.
I think it works here because, Bogus, there's plenty of people like me who, instead of spending all week in a paper, go, oh, I work so much better if I'm against the clock. I don't think baseball is going to work better like I didn't work better if they are against the clock. So I have a hard time envisioning. Now, I will also close with this point. I, for the life of me, and I know it rewards the owners' pockets with revenue, and so outside of spite and spiting the owners, I, for the life of me, can't figure out why the Players Association would not want expanded playoffs, right? Because if you do care about things more than money, my assumption is you also care about postseason glory, winning World Series, doing exactly what you dreamt of doing as a kid when you were 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, dreaming of being that player in the moment in October. An expanded postseason gives way more players that opportunity to try to live that dream, to try to chase down, hey, 60-game season, maybe my team I didn't think was as good when we entered camp in March, but now we got a real shot at this thing if we get hot. And you never know. We get hot in a couple playoff series. Maybe I find myself in a World Series that I may have missed out on in my career. There's got to be a lot of those guys, Bogus, that if I'm a player and I got presented with, oh, I have a better shot at making the postseason this year on top of the 60-game season, I want in. So I never understood why the players were against the expanded postseason to begin with, outside of the mere fact of it helps the owners, so basically bleep them.
Yeah, because didn't we have at one point, like, while they were still negotiating, in air quotes, where that came off the table as almost like a give back to the player? I remember having this conversation going, why is this good news to the players that there's not expanded playoffs? Because I'm with you. I mean, I don't know what we're missing, because for like nine different reasons, you'd want more playoff games. You'd want to keep playing. You'd want to have a better chance at winning. You'd want to have the cushion of maybe not being great for 60 games, but still sneaking in as a wild card team as opposed to a division winner. In theory, there's more money than if, because we're playoff shares and TV revenue goes up. So I've never understood why the players wouldn't want this. And my thought now even was, they must have called and been like, hey, by the way, we're still good with 16 playoff teams, not 10. Just get back to us if you guys want to do this, leaving a voicemail at Rob Manfred's office. So, they're like the only negotiations here, and even going to adding these six extra teams, there's no negotiating there either. It's just the next best records and we're in. And like, so maybe you have to talk about the structure of that new first round with these extra teams, but like all of the decision making is on the league side in terms of like venues and TV contracts and sharing money, whatever. So You know, to me, that's where the haggling would be here. But I've always thought the players would sign up for this in a second. And maybe that's what has changed along the lines here, Sean, is that the union's opinion of this, you know, if they did not like it at one point, now they do. And that's maybe they are the ones that restarted all of this to try and get it in before first pitch tonight.
Yeah, my prediction will be too little too late. I don't think he gets something done within one day. And as you pointed out, why not do this 10 days ago?
I also, like, I would give them till tomorrow. I mean, I don't know what if there's a hard and fast rule here, but like the Nats and Yankees and Giants and Dodgers are not changing anything about tonight's games, whether there's 10 or 16 playoff teams.
That's
like, you're still going, you know what, to the wall here for 60 games to get in. So it's not like any managerial decision is going to be different today because it's 10 or 16 teams. So I would even give them like through the weekend because it doesn't, nothing is going to change because everybody's going 100% here to the finish line. And so I don't know that the numbers really matter or why today has to be a deadline. Probably written somewhere, but if both sides are okay with going past that written rule, then talk about it for longer than just these 24 hours.
We had some NBA basketball yesterday in Orlando, Bogish. I'm not sure how much of this you caught. They were scrimmages. It's impossible for me to sit there and watch all of these games, but I definitely checked in on a few, including the Nets. And then our old friend Gary Gerald was calling the Kings game, getting taken by NBA TV. So calm and so boring as the Kings played the Heat later at night last night. But let me just set the tone for those of you who may have missed the games on NBA TV as we prepare for next week's regular season resumption opening night that will come of the NBA 1 week here behind Major League Baseball. They are starting to play some pre-restartup season games. How it looked on TV. All right. You obviously have the NBA logo at center court because you're not doing team courts, although I thought they shipped team courts in. Is that just for the postseason, Bogus?
No, it's for practice. They're practicing on their arena floors. I guess that was the way, instead of finding all of these new courts to lay over the floor in ballrooms and dining halls and whatnot through Disney, they had teams bring their already existing courts down there, and they laid those floors down to create the courts where there weren't already courts to begin with.
Okay, sounds ridiculous. But anyway, you have the NBA logo, you have I think larger than I expected, Black Lives Matter across the court, but just from around the scenes where you'd usually see the fans. The benches are basically layered in three rows, spaced out apart, and it almost looks like when you're checking into the game, Bogus, like you're coming down for the Price is Right. You're running on down, you're running down to the bench. It's not your usual, like, 15 chairs in a row on the first, and you get up. Now, I think that accomplishes two things. I think they're spacing out players, although I'd argue once you're already in that locker room playing on the court with each other, going through practices, eating meals together, you're in the bubble. I don't know that the spacing on the bench really, now that's the end-all be-all of safety when it comes to the NBA bubble, but it also, I got to be honest, looks better on TV because it looks like people are sitting in the first couple rows the way they've spaced it out. And then in the center, they have, I guess, what's the press area of people invited to the bubble, and it's all, I guess, like screened plexiglass or whatever, and they're all separated almost
in their
own booths.
It's a huge penalty box.
Right, it's like a penalty box in hockey, a huge penalty box, and those guys are separate from the players. And then right behind where the players sit, you have giant screens running like the team logos across it. And I can only assume that that's eventually where they're going to do, like, the virtual fans screaming and yelling, chanting defense and stuff would be my assumption. You don't really get a shot of the other side of what's behind the TV cameras, but the only other follow-up I would have to that would be one of the things you're allowed to do in Orlando is go to other games. So if you're bored or whatever and, you know, you guys have played at, or maybe you have an off day and, all right, I'm going to go check out the Heat play the Bucks or something like that. You as a player that's already in the bubble have the ability to go to these games. I don't know where they're putting them, Bogus, unless they're putting them behind where the cameras are for this shot.
Yeah, and I thought, too, I wasn't sure inside that penalty box. I thought those were all, like, game officials, you know, the scoreboard guy, the PA guy. I thought the media had to sit up in the stands away from I didn't think they could ever get close to players. So maybe there are kind of sections of seats on the, like you said, on the TV camera side of things where everybody's going to go. But in general, you know, I thought it looked really, really good. I thought they did a really good job of setting everything up, including the plain court. I don't know why that mattered to me. But the decision to have the court basically bare, except for the NBA logo and the Black Lives Matter graphic on top of that. You know, they could have painted it. It could have been different stains of wood. They could have made the key a different color, but it's just a court with lines. And for some reason, even that to me worked. It just, everything about it prevents you from knowing that they're playing in an empty gym. Like, you just don't see it. And the lighting reminds me of the All-Star games. You know, the All-Star game, the arena is usually, like, I don't know how they do it, and I don't know what the right technical term is, but it's dark all around the court. Like, you don't always see the fans. It makes this kind of almost like a movie set feel, at least in my eyes. And that's kind of how they replicated it in down in Orlando, where everything is dark around the court, so you don't see any of the emptiness. And, like, as you said, the size of that, the scorer's table and the two or three tiered bench on either side, then the high video boards, you don't see anything. It just, it looks like they're playing. I haven't thought, at times it felt like a video game where you don't have your surroundings anyway. It's just the court. I thought whoever came up with that design overall did a really good job, because it didn't, maybe once or twice from a baseline view where you can only, you can see the actual wings of the arena, you can't tell that they're playing in emptiness, at least visually.
I completely agree. I was very surprised at how it played on TV, and I think postseason games, you know, even if you're not into the restart of the eight regular season games, I think the playoffs are going to play well there. And it kind of gave me a reminder, and I know it's, you compared it to the All-Star game, and I'm not comparing the lighting, but I'm just more comparing the bigness and spaciousness behind. It gave me a little bit of feel like we're watching basketball in the Olympics, I guess. Like, things were, like, you could tell things are just a little off, but it wasn't overwhelming. Like, you drop them in the middle of Madison Square Garden and you're just seeing the pan around of the empty seats, like we're seeing in Major League Baseball. They made it feel like people were there with the players themselves, with the three benches, with that glass, and that's all you got on your TV shot. And I think that absolutely works. Now, I did see a video of basically the Clippers being announced on the court, and they're going full-blown like there are fans there, ladies and gentlemen, here come the Los Angeles Clippers. And it just sounds a little weird. You know, the rap music's playing, the balls are dribbling, and there's no cheer behind it. So that's, they're not really doing the crowd noise, I guess, because, unless they just figured there'd be no crowd noise at an exhibition game anyway. But I would wonder if the postseason they'd have to pump that in, maybe chance of defense, stuff like that. But overall, I'm with you, man. I thought for NBA scrimmages, it kept me a little longer than I would have predicted. I was mainly just looking to see how it looked out. And I think it's going to work. I think the only thing that will come as the games get bigger and better is, you know, naturally in the NBA is prepared for this. You're going to get, you know, the people who love the Black Lives Matter on the court, the people who can't stand it, go, oh, I'm boycotting this, that, the other thing. Look, it's basketball, I'm going to watch, and that's the end of it. But I think that's the only time you're going to hear anybody complain about or fight about anything the way the NBA looks on TV, because they nailed everything else. And kudos to the NBA to spend that much money doing this project. I think you figured it out. I think the video boards work blocking the empty seats, and I think it's only going to look bigger and better as the games get bigger and better.
Yeah, and I forgot about the fact that players can go to other games, and at some point, obviously, there's going to be only a handful of teams left down there, but until then, man, I need those guys in those seats heckling. I mean, imagine if we get a story of, like, Giannis sitting 10 rows back chirping LeBron during a Laker game or vice versa. You know, I need some drama coming off of this, at the very least just some noise from those guys having fun watching other teams play. That's going to be, I hope that gives us some interesting storyline here over the next couple of weeks of guys either being like strangely cheerleaders or being bad heckling fans when they're watching somebody else play.
So, and we'll get to your update in just a second, but you're right. That would be a lot of fun if one of these guys suddenly becomes Spike Lee and they're just screaming and yelling and it becomes like a thing at the other series. The problem, though, Bogus, is as this bubble evolves and as we get to the conference finals, the NBA finals, there's going to be less and less of that because these guys who have been in the bubble aren't going to stay for the NBA finals. So for the regular season and the first round of the postseason, you could have a chance to see more of that as the season gets later and more teams get eliminated. It's going to be less and less people there, which is the opposite of a normal NBA season where more and more crowds and more people keep pumping in, which is something interesting to have. But the NBA on TV, it looks like it's going to work. It's going to work. By golly, it's going to work. The only thing that put you to sleep was not the court, not the crowd. It was Gary Gerald calling a Kings game on NBA TV late last night. Bogish, bogish, bogish. We do have to begin this hour, though, with some NFL news that came down yesterday. You know, as teams are following and stadiums are following state regulations, state guidelines, everything that comes with large gatherings and large crowds. You've read plenty of them in updates, bogus. The Eagles will not have fans. The Giants and Jets, no fans, quote, until further notice. Yesterday, I was perked up a little bit, and I'm sure there were some that were wondering, wait a minute, what's going on in Atlanta? The Atlanta Falcons at Mercedes-Benz plan on having anywhere between 10,000 to 20,000 spaced-out fans at home games. And I said, okay. I mean, if that's what their state says they could do, I'm sure there'll be plenty of willing people to do it. I could see this becoming, you know, a backlash situation where people get very angry because that's what we do on Twitter. And then the NFL may have done this before and I missed it, or came out very soon after and said, for those stadiums and areas that will allow fans, we have a rule. Masks on the entire season. If you want to go to a football game, you're going to do so by wearing a mask. And I think that is plenty acceptable. That is plenty great. Heck, it is something I have argued for in New York. I am a big proponent now. I think it's time to open the gyms. Look, you can kill me, crush me, argue with me about that. I think you should at least have the option of wearing a mask in a gym to work out. That's my own personal opinion. And that's also comes out of laziness because I'm tired of running in 100-degree heat. But if the masks are on and you could space out fans in areas where the government says you're allowed to go to a game, I don't have an issue with it. And Bogus, I point to, I don't know about you, I follow a lot of these like history photographed on Instagram. You get some old pictures. There are plenty of pictures during the era of the Spanish flu of baseball fans in attendance with masks on. So I'm sure there'll be those people who like to fight at Costco, fighting at Mercedes-Benz that they shouldn't have to wear a mask. But that's part of the deal. Wear a mask. If that's what the NFL wants to do, it's going to look a little weird. But hey, if it's a way to get some fans in a stadium and they feel they could do so safely, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, again, with this entire conversation, I can't imagine anyone not being okay with this. This is one of the dumbest fights on a long list of dumb fights we have had in this country, is to just wear a mask when you're not in your house, when you're around other people. It's not all the time. It's not nonstop. It's not inside. A lot of places, you just need to wear a mask until you get to your seat, and then you can sit down, take your mask off, and have your dinner or do whatever. It is such an easy thing to do. And of course, the NFL had to do this. And this is one of the few things that they are giving themselves and league headquarters the power to do. They're going to give teams their overall structure on how they need to space people out and whatnot. But at the end of the day, the actual decision of letting people into your building is going to come down to individual teams and to their local cities, what you're allowed to do. So, like, there's only a few places where the NFL is going to make these broad decisions for everybody. And this is one that they have to make, and quite frankly, isn't even one that they should have to say, like, almost out loud, because it should just be the norm already. If you're going to go to something like this, cover your mouth while you're going from the parking lot inside, sit down, and then when there's no one around you and you're having your pretzel or your curly fries with cheese and bacon and whatever in a helmet, then you can just, you know, move your mask and go about your business and your caloric intake, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, to me, again, shouldn't be no big deal. And also, they're oddly making masks really fun. Like, and of course, all these sports, like, you could go on an NFL shop today and buy your team logoed mask, right? So
right. It's
not as if everybody's got to come in dressed with the surgical mask with the nose piece that's fallen off because you've been wearing the same one for 3 months. No, you can have a cool one that says, Cardinals on the front, Falcons on the front, the bird, the logo. I tell you the truth, I ordered a 4-pack from NFL shop of Giants masks just because, from the standpoint of mine, it just kind of fallen apart. And if we're in this for the long run, at least till the end of the year, at least till there's a vaccine, I might as well. My whole wardrobe's Giants. I might as well have Giants masks. So I've ordered that.
Why would you get fancy at your face?
Right. I've ordered that as well. So the NFL is choosing to do this. And as far as anybody kicking and screaming and yelling about the Falcons situation with being the first to announce that they plan on having 10,000 to 20,000 fans, I think there's two parts of this. One, should the NFL have made this an all-or-nothing situation? And two, are you worried about outbreaks if you're the NFL and it coming back on you? And I'll tackle number two first. There's always going to have to be that concern. Obviously, it's going to raise an eyebrow and a little scaredness when you bring crowds of people together, and obviously they must because certain states don't even want to take the chance with that. I personally have been looking every day because I've been curious about this. Are we going to get the story from any of these NASCAR races, specifically the race that is now 8 days ago, the All-Star race in Bristol, Tennessee, so-and-so, this many people ended up coming down with coronavirus after attending NASCAR event. Because, right, anytime we've seen these big crowd things with pool parties at Ozarks, beaches in Florida, we always get those stories that have come out and, like, it just turns out, you know, 100 people here ended up were here and got infected with coronavirus. And I've been on the lookout for that, and I'm sure we still have another week to go. Would that have happened at Bristol Motor Speedway in Tennessee? And if it did not, and they found a way to space out fans properly and have masks on properly, I think the blueprint is there in a state or states that aren't having these massive outbreaks right now and feel like they have it semi under control, that you can do that. So that's the first part of this, Bogus, and I'll let you tackle that in a second. The second part of this would be the competitive advantage and or should the NFL allow that. I have seen people argue, and I think I might have even done this at first, too, when this notion was brought up. How can you allow the Falcons, or at the time Florida teams, to pump fans into their stadium and then other teams come home to no crowd advantage? And the more you think about it, the more you look at it, especially if you saw the way Bristol Motor Speedway, and I know that's more bigger than these NFL stadiums looked on TV with the fans spaced out, you ain't getting 10,000, 20,000 fans into an 80,000, 100,000 stadium and having that be a competitive advantage to a team. I don't think anybody walks into Mercedes-Benz Stadium as a road opponent and starts shaking in their boots because 15,000 people are chanting, "Let's go Falcons," as Matt Ryan is driving down the field, or defense as your team's coming. It's going to sound echoey. It's not going to be a thing. It's just another way to get revenue into the owner's lost revenue. To me, unless it's a packed house or something at 75% capacity, I don't think there's any competitive advantage that comes with it. So to me, I have zero issue with some places having fans and some places not.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because my first thought would normally be like it should be everybody or it should be nobody. But when you actually think about it, this amount of people, and you know, the Ravens have said they'd have a max of 14,000 people if they can have anybody. So, you know, everybody else has their plans too for what it would look like if they let people in. And it's a small number and it's going to be spread out. You're still going to feel like you're in this huge cave of nothingness. So, you're right. I don't think it is going to make a difference in terms of any kind of competitive imbalance because it was loud here and not loud there. It's not going to be loud anywhere. Like, you're going to barely hear the random pockets of people chanting whatever. So I would normally say, yeah, we should wait for everyone to have fans before anyone does. But because it's going to be so minimal in its effect, if you can do it certain places and not others, then go ahead and do it as long as it's safe and everybody, you know, follows the rules.
Yeah, and look, if you are of the optimist point of view and you really want to see things get back to normal, I would even say if you are dealing in reality, as you like to say, and I would call some of it doom and gloom, and I know me and you have gone back on this, I think everybody should be rooting for this to work if the Falcons are going to go through it, because you need to set some sort of an example as reality, I should say, as the normal life that we want can try to get back to normal as medicines evolve and vaccines get evolved. Somebody is going to have to be the first to do things. The first to have fans, the first to introduce this, the first to have fans wearing masks. And nobody is going to feel comfortable with any of that until the proof is there that it works. So if nobody ends up getting sick from attending these NASCAR events, and then the Falcons in a couple home games in September have it, and there hasn't been any spikes or any of that, that's the kind of blueprint we need as a society to go, okay, maybe other places could try this because it worked here. And until you have somebody do that, now you don't want to take a shot and it be completely unsafe and it blows up in your face, because then it goes the other way and it goes, well, hold on, it didn't work here and now that sets us back. But I think when you hear this news, if your first reaction is, that's a terrible idea, you shouldn't be doing that, you might be right, but in the end, we should all be rooting for this to work and work out, because it's just a way to take those next steps back to being the way we want to be again in life.
Right. So there's a lot to unpack here. So if I get too whatever, you can stop me. So here's the problem, at least that I've encountered, because one of the most insulting things that I have either been told directly or seen other people who think like me told directly is that, like, we are rooting for the virus. And in fact, right, there are people who, and whether if I'm overreacting, I'll live with it for now and maybe, like, I'll get past it. But, like, I've muted people, blocked people, like unsocial media friended people that have said that to me, because I just, it's so insulting to me, because I would never tell you, and not you, but them in the other direction, that they're rooting for people to die, even though I thought that their thoughts at times were opening up people to getting sick and dying. Like, I would never call them a murderer, or that they have blood on their hands. I would never say that, because I don't think that that's their true intention. So I've been so insulted by the reverse of that I'm rooting for the virus when I've at times preached caution. And I'll speak for all of us in the doom and gloom section for a second, but for those of us in the middle of it who I think are being rational in our doom and gloom, I've never been against these things when it made sense to do them. Like, the hesitation has been, you're going too fast. It's not time for this just yet. So I'm okay with you letting fans into your building when they're wearing masks, when they're going to be spread out, when you've put in a bazillion hand-washing stations, when you've limited what you can do in the bathroom line or getting concessions, or, you know, I've got to order through my app and someone's going to bring me my food so that I'm not actually standing online next to somebody else hoping they stay 6 feet away. When it's right and it's safe, we of course need to do these things. The argument has always been, at least again from like the rational side of things, is we can't do them until we're ready. Just to do them for the sake of doing them when it's not right is where the problem lies. And from where we, the collective, we sit, a lot of things that we have talked about have at least on, you know, individual levels have worked. Like we said, be careful opening up bars and restaurants. And then bars and restaurants opened in certain places and things went nuts and they had to reclose those things. And that, you know, and like they have proof that that's where, or theoretically where, people got sick from based on who was around them and is now also sick, and credit card receipts and cell phone tracking. So like there's some science involved into our hesitation here. So to go all the way back to your Falcon point, you know, Georgia has taken a lot of heat throughout this entire thing, the way they've handled things. In certain areas and certain ways, the numbers have worked out in their favor. On other areas, you know, my side, I guess, has been right, or our fears were somehow, you know, came true. But if Georgia thinks that it's right to put fans in the building and fans want to go, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they shouldn't. I just hope that they are making the right decision and they're using the right markers to let people in. Because like you said, we have to do it at some point. The argument is about when that point is. And maybe in September in Atlanta, they'll be in a spot to do this safely. And again, hopefully people pay attention to the rules and let the plan actually work the way that it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to see, if you're the Falcons, I wonder if you hoped by announcing that yesterday you would have other teams kind of join you in this, at least a couple of this, because it's going to look really weird, I think, if we start opening day and 31 teams and led by governments, whether that, who's decided that, or the team owners or the stadium's operations or whatever, or whoever has gone down this road, if only the Falcons are the team allowing fans in. Although I guess in the state of Tennessee, if you've allowed in Bristol, maybe the Titans is something they would go down this path as well. But if you're the Falcons and you're alone on that island, boy, that is a risky island to be standing on. It's very boom or bust the way this could work for you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of the problem too becomes the individual venues, right? I mean, just scanning my memory through, you know, the ones in this area that I've been to that I'm familiar with, obviously, you know, Citi Field and Yankee Stadium have these huge concourses where people could spread out, where if you limit, you know, the different food items and concession areas, you could definitely manage people, keep them separate, keep lines short as you're spreading out through the building. But like the last thing I went to was a soccer match at Red Bull Arena in New Jersey back in March, and that place is like a sardine can. I mean, the walkways are, you know, feel like they're only 6 feet apart. It's very, very small. I don't know how they would manage a similar setup, just like, you know, MetLife Stadium could probably handle it. But the old Nassau Coliseum here on Long Island, even though they did renovations, it's still all of these skinny walkways and not enough bathrooms. So, like, I don't know how they would logistically do it. Mercedes-Benz Stadium makes total sense. This huge spaceship of a building. But I don't know what Phillips Arena could do where the Hawks play. I don't know what, you know, SunTrust Park is in Atlanta. I don't know what it looks like. I think they'd have the ability to do it too. But I think we also get in this area where maybe the cities are going to lean on, if one can't do it, none of them can do it, because it might work in my football stadium, but it's not going to work in my baseball stadium, and I don't want to have the football team love me and the baseball team hate me, so all I'm going to do right now is say no one can have it. It's the simplest thing. So there's so many layers to this as well, as we kind of peel back and figure out in which directions to go in.
At least I could say this. If the NFL's telling you to wear a face mask, if finally the president's telling you to wear a face mask, I don't know about you, Boogs, for the last 6 days, I've seen less arguments on Facebook about masks, and I think that is relieving, because they were getting nauseating watching people fight over something that's so not worth fighting about.
Yeah, I was just watching a lady get kicked off an airplane for not wearing one, and the whole plane applauded, and she was all angry, so I don't even know if that's true or not. People maybe are tired of sharing these videos.
Maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe we're just mask tired, because I will just – look, public service announcement, too, because we're in this point of view. There might be some of you listening going, rolling your eyes, going, oh, the mask, you don't need the mask, and look, here's what I would tell you, and with the NFL making the mask announcement. Even if you don't think the masks work, and full transparency, there have been moments I absolutely have thought to myself, virus like this, I don't know. I don't know if everything adds up. Now, you don't want to take any science from me. Obviously, we know my educational background. But even if you felt like that at any point, even if you have, there is zero negative to wearing it. So even if they tell you it works 10% of the time, 20% of the time, why would you fight that? You don't have. It's not like you have to walk around your living room, your kitchen. Me and you aren't doing the show with masks on right now. When you're out in public, throw the mask on. That's it. You throw it on. When you're done being out in public, you come home. It's not. There's no negative to it. If it makes other people feel good, is that so wrong? If it protects people 10%, even 5%, even if you know if it's not 90%, is that so wrong? Just keep your mask on. And seeing the NFL take this initiative, seeing people wake up and do this, it's enough. There are things worth fighting for in this world. We've seen plenty of them in 2020, right? Fighting over a face covering and the government, quote-unquote, controlling you, or whatever you've been fighting about, is so senseless and so stupid. I don't care where you stand. To me, you can hate masks. I don't know anybody that walks through a Home Goods or a Target or a supermarket that comes home and goes, you know what I love doing today, honey? I loved wearing that mask. No, we all know they stink. We all know they're annoying. But it's just something we all have to do together. And even if it works a little bit, even if you're not a big believer in it at all, if it makes other people feel good, just put it on and stop fighting with people about it. And the NFL, I think, is a place where a lot of people look to, unfortunately, sometimes for the worst role models. And if the NFL is telling you to do it, I actually, in a weird way, Bogus, think a lot of these people who fight will go, oh, well, the NFL is telling me to do it. Like, now I'm really not going to fight it, because it's the NFL and it means so much to so many people. I know that sounds crazy, but that's how crazy this year has been.
No, I know, and it's a little disheartening, because we've also had these other benchmarks of other people, other organizations, like now making this declaration to wear a mask. And, you know, the president has won now too recently, the NFL, like there is a little, it's disheartening in that it takes a football league or a politician or somebody else, like a non-scientist or right. a non-logic, to put one of these things over your face for the small amount of time that you're interacting with people. You don't need to wear it all the time. People are acting like we're saying, right. I mean, imagine if this was in the grand scheme of things, and you know that, you know, how seriously I take all of this, like this could be exponentially worse. Like if it was truly like really airborne that we had to like lock ourselves in our house,
right?
Imagine the idiocy we'd be dealing with now with people who like would like you had no choice but to be inside and protect right. yourself or go nowhere. Like be happy that you can go to Home Goods or right. Lowe's or Best Buy or the bar and just deal with the fact that you need to space out and have a mask on for a few minutes. It's really such an inconsequential thing that it you shouldn't waste any time being angry over it, especially if you want to see football or a car race again.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
All right, Bogus, we start with Doc Rivers. His former player, Kevin Garnett, has now joined the ownership bid of the Minnesota Timberwolves. How would KG fare as an owner? Doc has some thoughts.
Well, I think he'd be great. I know Kevin, that is something he's always wanted. You know, I think part of the thing is I thought he had a deal earlier with Minnesota, and it didn't work out. So I would love to see Garnett and more players get into the ownership wave. You know, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't mind this, and I kind of feel the same way with A-Rod with the Mets bid, and I know Mets owners probably would rather have – Mets fans probably rather have the Steve Cohen bid. I see this with Jeter, although it bothers me seeing him in a Marlins box. I think players involved in ownership, while sometimes it always doesn't work, look at Michael Jordan. Obviously, the team hasn't necessarily been successful. I think in certain sports, in certain ways, might help influence getting free agents there. I think it's from a fan's perspective – as long as other people that are smart with money are behind this and it's not just a bunch of players randomly together, I think having a player as a face of an ownership group can obviously help your team, in my opinion, attract free agents and be relevant, Bogish.
Yeah, and I think having somebody that's lived the other side always helps, right? I mean, they know what teams need to be successful. They know how things work. They know mistakes that the previous owners, the owners that they were around also made. So I like that experience being brought to the ownership box. But I do get annoyed sometimes, and maybe this is just my Jeter pettiness, that like we make a big deal about Jeter owning the Marlins, and I think he only owns like 4% of it. Like, it's barely his money, and that's fine. But like, it just like, if you're going to be, I feel like if you're going to do it, like, we should almost make you really be the owner. Like, that, it seems to be the good thing about A-Rod and J-Lo. Although I wonder, as much money as A-Rod has made, J-Lo's made much, much more than him. So I wonder if she's just like, yeah, sure, honey, go have a baseball team. Leave me alone. And she's just like giving him the real cash to be involved. But it's their money involved. He's not just the face of a bunch of old rich dudes who want to own a baseball team. So there is always that. So yeah, I'm in general, I'm on board with KG. Plus, I feel like he hates the current owner. So I would love for him to like buy the team and then like burn it to the ground out of spite for this guy. Like, but yeah, I'll be on board with KG being in there as long as, because he'd be fun to have like in meetings and having speak, you know, having hear him speak for the owners and the league as opposed to the player's perspective. Speaking of the NBA, we've got Russell Westbrook, who is now healthy and cleared back at practice yesterday. And so far, the Rockets guard seems to like the bubble down at Disney.
I think it's going to be very, very vital for us to be able to bond and stay very close-knit, because times like this, I think it kind of only allows you to be able to come closer or grow apart. And I think that we're such a good place from what I heard from not being here. My job is to come in and just fit along right where everything else is going perfectly fine.
Whatever. Team chemistry is what it is. These guys are going to be around each other all the time. They're going to be fine. I can't imagine they're all going to hate each other after all of this. So they'll be fine. They'll bomb. They'll have their meals and play their ping pong and go out and win some basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're in a bubble. You're eating bad food, according to them. Fine. If that's what gets you together and that's your bonding. My guess is you're probably doing that on the road during the NBA season ever. It seems like they're trying to mentally reach for things, but that's just me. And finally, on 93.7, the Fan in Pittsburgh, Pony and Mueller, John Clayton on Antonio Brown's Hall of Fame candidacy.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the 6 years he put together, you can't erase. And, you know, what he does off the field, and unlike some of the other Hall of Fames, you know, we don't consider the off-the-field things to be it. We do things on the field. And, I mean, the only thing would be just the shortening of his career. You know, if this is going to be it, that can be taken into account. But, he's one of the best on a six-year basis. And so I'd have to think that it may not be first ballot, but I think he does have a chance to make it.
Yeah, seven years over 1,000 yards, led the league in receiving yardage twice, led the league in receptions twice, led the league in touchdowns once, yards per game he led once back in 2017. Look, NFL careers are shorter than a lot of these other sports. I think Antonio Brown actually does get in, and for all the off-the-field stuff and acting like an idiot, Terrell Owens in the Hall of Fame as well. I don't think you could tell the history of the game the last 10 years without Antonio Brown. He's in for me, Bogish.
I would just say you need to be careful when we say, you know, we don't consider character issues, because there's a difference between being a bad teammate and being flighty and causing drama over your helmet in Oakland, and then some of the things that Antonio Brown has done or been accused of doing off the field. That's where the difference lies. You can be a bad teammate. You can be a jerk in simple terms, and that should not keep you out of the Hall of Fame. But throwing furniture out of an apartment building that almost fell onto a kid is an issue, and the multiple allegations involving women and him acting inappropriately is also an issue, too. So before, you know, just you can't dismiss all of those things. Some of them can be, but some of them cannot, and it would make me be hesitant to vote for Antonio Brown.
I am not personally surprised that the Dodgers locked up Mookie Betts, because when you trade for a guy of that caliber and you're in a big market and you have 1 year left on his deal, my assumption was they would find a way to get a deal done with him. Now, I'm a little surprised that they go and pay him this much money before he's played a single game with them, and knowing the financial fallout, knowing they probably could have played a cat-and-mouse game if Mookie liked it in L.A. this offseason, got it to less money. Your thoughts, Bogus? Are you surprised at the deal we saw yesterday with Mookie Betts?
Yeah, I mean, I really am. I thought part of the reason why Betts was out of Boston was because he wanted to be on the open market, and the Red Sox were afraid that they would lose him for nothing, so they dealt him for nothing, depending on what you value and what they got back from the Dodgers. But in this current climate, to see this yesterday was a little startling. Plus, you know, the story then comes out that, well, since this is done now, they must have been talking about this for a while before anything got really bad. So that's why this happens in this situation. But if there was ever going to be something that makes you hesitate on signing someone for 12 years and $300+ million, it would be the current situation we're in. I know why he wants security, but if I'm the Dodgers and I want to cry poor, or at least I have the threat of being poor after all of this, I go, all right, Mook, let's just wait a little bit. Give me a couple of months to see what, you know, what, how this all plays out,
Mook.
And then we'll come back
to
the table.
I love you calling him Mook, like you know him.
Yeah,
hey, Mook,
of course.
Come on over here. Mook, you want to go to Applebee's?
Andrew Friedman. So, like, they, you'd think that this would make them hit the pause button no matter when these conversations started, but now here they are, And I get why they'd want him, but you'd think that they would at least hesitate a little here. So I don't want to read too much into this, but I also never want to hear someone tell me again that they're afraid that they don't have money and they're not in this for making money, and that, you know, they need all the help they can get, when the Dodgers, in the worst or at least the most unknown economic feeling and atmosphere that we can all remember, just gave this guy $365 million for the next dozen years.
We got over-unders, we got a World Series pick, and we each, for a 60-game season where something bound or wacky's bound to happen, we got some predictions, fellas. Let's go. Let's look ahead to the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Bogus, I'm going to go with three over-unders, and why don't we go one for one here and kind of give a little thoughts. And now this is what really makes us wild and fun. 162 games, you know, we're so used and so accustomed to that if you're gambling, to look ahead. And the over-unders, if you don't know, is how many wins will the team have? Are they going to go over that win total or under? We'll give our reasons why. I'm going to start with an under for me, Bogus, at 31.5. The Wizard of Watch DA's Boston Red Sox. Look, the Red Sox don't have Chris Sale. They traded away Mookie Betts. They traded away David Price. That's a team that, for a World Series contender so many years in a row, stripping this thing back down. Yes, they still have talent, Devers and Benintendi and such. They're going to struggle this year in the worst way. The Yankees and Rays, I think, are going to smack the heck out of them. That's a tough NL East that the American League East is going to be playing back and forth. To say that that team at 31 wins is going to go over 500, because remember, it's a 60-game season, obviously, I think it's too much to ask. I'm going under on Red Sox, 31.5.
That's a good one. I would agree for sure. I'm going to stay in the American League with my first one. I'm going to go to the Angels here. This is a team that I am super intrigued by. I forgot that they had added Anthony Rendon until Rendon had a strained oblique, is now missing opening day. But they've got the best player in the world in Mike Trout. And they've got Shohei Ohtani. Now, Sean, I don't know exactly what the numbers will be. I don't know how he's going to pitch once a week, DH the rest of the time. But we are going to see in this short sample size of 60 games and maybe more for them, I think one of the more remarkable feats that we're ever going to see in baseball is this guy being an elite pitcher and an elite hitter at the very same time, which gets me to, they're pegged at 31 wins. It will not be an easy one. I'm going to take the over on the Angels at 31 wins. It might only be, you know, 33, 35, but they're going to surprise a couple of people, and they're going to keep themselves in this AL West race, the strength of those three guys on offense and a little Ohtani pitching as well.
All right, that's pick number two. Well, first for Bogus, here's my second over-under pick. And I'm sorry, National League fans, I'm sticking with the American League, the third straight American League one here on the show. We have alluded to this story throughout the show, and that's the Blue Jays don't have a home, Bogus. I mean, here we are, opening days tomorrow, and I know they're not scheduled to play at home tomorrow, it's not until next week, but they've already been kicked out of an entire country. They now have gotten kicked out of Pittsburgh. They're being told, basically, the minor league stadiums don't have the lighting. How is it, and how am I supposed to take a team, by the way, with a lot of young talent who I thought could surprise in the 60-game season originally, with absolutely no focus, not knowing where they're going to be, and there's even some thoughts if they have to go total road games, even if they're technically the home team in those games, that some players may decide, you know what, now I'm opting out because I don't feel like being on airplanes and trains all season long.
Right.
They're pegged at 27.5, which is just under 500. I think the once promising situation of the Blue Jays is going to completely crumble. I don't know how mentally they can survive this. Give me the Jays under 27.5 for pick number two for me.
Well, long story short, I know a lot about Charlie Montoyo, their manager, and I think he's going to do a good job of managing them no matter where they play, getting them as close as possible to the right place, you know, the right mind frame. But yeah, it's still going to be tough in that division too, seeing the Yankees and Rays a bunch as well. So I think you're in a good direction there. I'm going to jump to the NL now, pick number two for me. The Cubs would be my pick. Bob Nightingale mentioned them a second ago. They'd be my pick. I still don't really understand all of the reasons why they have not been as consistently good as they should have been since their World Series. But a lot of those guys are there, are still there, are trending in a good direction right now. So I'm going to go with the Cubs, an over on 32.5 wins in the NL Central.
All right, pick number three. I'm going to go to the National League here. That NL East is a tough division. The Braves are excellent. The Phillies are excellent. The Marlins are garbage, but they can be spunky. The Nationals are defending World Series champs. Look, guys, hate the rain on your parade. I'm going Mets under 31.5 here. Look, Marcus Stroman now is banged up with his calf. You heard Bogus compare his own injury.
Yeah, that's
JV
the difference.
To Stroman. They earned, and I think people forgot this because we've been such a long layoff. What was going to make the Mets special this year was going to be the fact that, okay, Yoenis Cespedes is back. They're going to have the really good pitching. They already lost Noah Syndergaard for the year back in spring training. Now Marcus Stroman, who knows when that calf's going to pop up and be okay. Jacob deGrom is the best pitcher in the National League. Second best pitcher in baseball, obviously, to Gerrit Cole. We all know this. But I think the Mets ultimately are just not going to have the starting pitching behind deGrom to go through this 60-game sprint. You're only going to get deGrom on the hill 12 times or so. And the lineup, look, I believe when I see it with Yoenis Cespedes playing all season long, Robinson Cano, nothing going to creep up. Alonso and McNeil, it's a lot to ask them to completely repeat in year two, although I think they're really good players. I think stock a little too high on the Mets. I think they have a disappointing under 31.5.
I reluctantly would agree with you, Sean, and I'll move on to the Dodgers and balance out my Met pain with who I hope will save us all from the end of your Yankee World Series drought. They are the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm taking an over on 38 wins, 42-18. A specific prediction for you, Sean, right now. 42-18 is how the Dodgers will storm through this 60-game regular season, setting themselves up perfectly to beat the Yankees in the World Series when we get to it in the fall.
All right, you know, it's funny you say that, Bogus, and it's going to sound really obnoxious, because on the 4th of July, when a few of us had gathered at Bob's Bar as Yankee fans, we had a little too much to drink, and we were starting to watch Yankee Classics, and they chanted midnight of 50-10 broke out. So if you were to say 48-12, it's funny, because people are already thinking about what kind of wacky records you could have. All right, those are our three over-unders. Keep it churning. Pete here, we each are going to make a World Series pick. I mentioned this on Twitter at MirazCBS earlier in the day. I think the Dodgers fall short here, Bogus. I think they'll be a playoff team, obviously, but I think the dreams of a playoff or a World Series for them don't happen. Look, sometimes it's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be. The wild assumption is Dodgers, Yankees, overwhelming favorites. They'll find themselves in a World Series. Not so fast. I will go yes for the Yankees. They have been long overdue here. It has been a long now 11 years since their last World Series in 2009. This is a team that's been knocking on the door only to be cheated out of World Series appearances by the Houston Astros and by apparently the Boston Red Sox over the last 3 years. The Yankees are so well stacked right now. I mean, their B team that they could trot out, could finish in third place in the American League East. They are loaded. I mean, guys like Clint Frazier, Miguel Andujar won't even be in the opening day lineup. I think the Yankees will win the World Series this year, but they will beat the Atlanta Braves, a mini comeback Ooh. Of a rivalry we saw in the 90s for multiple World Series in 96 and 99. I think the Atlanta Braves, and we see the two Eastern teams, which, by the way, I think Major League Baseball would love if we could only travel in one time zone for a World Series with all the Corona stuff going on. We will get Yankees-Braves with the Yankees winning the World Series is my pick.
I think they might love a Dodgers-Angels World Series or Cubs-White Sox or Mets-Yankees here already in one city. No travel, no matter what the time zone is. I'm going to be one of those uncreative people because I do think that, on one hand, the 60-game schedule will throw some things off, but it also is going to let teams not run their guys into the ground over 162 games, where the best teams will be the best and then be at their physical best, in theory, when we get to the postseason. And, you know, the Dodgers, to me, are just that good. I don't know that anybody else in the National League really could beat them in a series. So I've got the Dodgers. I've got the Yankees. I think their trip out of the AL might be slightly more treacherous. But even the teams that I think are good are historically not good against the Yankees when it matters most in October. So give me Yankees, give me Dodgers, and give me the Dodgers in six to finally get over the hump here and win another World Series, because they actually have a longer drought than your sweet little Yankees that we need to fix before we get to the Bronx.
I love Bogus going real technical, giving us the six games as well. We're not messing around here.
Already gave you the regular season record of 42-18, so I'm going to give you a six-game World Series win too. I got all the numbers for you.
So here we go. We have now one wacky 60-game season. Something goofy is going to happen. Prediction. Here's my prediction out of left field. No, for lack of a better term. The longest sports playoff drought is the Seattle Mariners since 2001. This is based on nothing with talent, because the Mariners presumed should be another year or two away. Expanded playoffs or no expanded playoffs, the AL West is a weird division. I think we have high hopes for the Angels. The Astros, who really knows? They lose Gerrit Cole. They don't have their manager. That offseason's been weird for them. Does this now refresh them? Do they come back? Texas could be okay, pretty good. Through the vision of the wild card, or through the path of the wild card, the Seattle Mariners surprise the world with their best 60-game effort and get to the postseason, snapping what is the longest postseason drought of the four major sports. My wacky prediction, the Mariners make the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't go that wacky. This has been a topic on the show and in baseball in general about what the 60-game season will allow to happen statistically. I'm going to say someone hits 400 over these 60 games, Sean, and that I'm going to then lose my mind when people try and say that that person hit 400 in a season, like historically. If there ever was an asterisk. Now, a lot of the other numbers are counting numbers that we're not going to get to. We're not going to break a home run record. We're not going to break Hack Wilson's RBI record, because there's just not enough games. But like ERA and batting average that are based on your playing time, so to speak, they can be broken. Those records can be broken in theory this season. But anything along those lines that happened in 60 games is not real. You cannot hit 400 over a 62-game season and get the same credit as 154 or 162. So someone's going to do it. People are going to try and pump it up like it actually happened. And I'm going to fight tooth and nail to at least just pull back and give some context on what that person did over 60 games.
It is the summer wind. It's Major League Baseball season. So just to recap quickly, I'm going Boston Red Sox under 31.5. The Blue Jays under 27.5. The Mets under 31.5. The Yankees over the Braves in a World Series, and the Mariners make the playoffs. Andrew Bogus, you.
Yeah, I went all over the Angels 31, over the Cubs 32.5, over for the Dodgers at 38. I've got LA, those Dodgers, over the Yanks in the World Series, and I have someone angering me by hitting 400 over a 60-game season.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Oh, opening day was here, and we've done a lot of Mothership at the Movies as we've passed time without our team sports, Bogus. So we asked the question, of our two of our baseball stars in these movies, who would you rather have on your opening day roster if this was the real major leagues? Roy Hobbs or Henry Rowengardner? And Bogus alert, we have a splitting of the masses on Twitter.
Whoa.
They went with your Roy Hobbs at 55%, Henry Rowengardner at 45%. But on Facebook, the Rowengardner crowd shined. 54% would rather have Henry Rowengardner on Facebook on their opening day roster. 46% would have rather have Roy Hobbs. A little deep analytics done by our deep dive team. Henry Rowengardner's fastball topped out at 103 miles per hour in 2019. In 2019, the average fastball velocity for a pitcher in the big leagues was 93.5. So, like I told you, Bogus, Henry Rowengardner throwing pitches that fast, that's a guy absolutely more valuable to your opening day roster than that injury-prone and can't-stay-out-of-gunfight-fighting Roy Hobbs. Give me Rowengardner on my opening day roster. I'm with Facebook.
I mean, you can have Facebook. I'll take Twitter, which is clearly the better platform these days. But really, like our country does, we have to break this tie by going to the normally completely down the middle and objective one, Pete the Body Bellotti. I think he has the final say on this matter to really to break this tie. We cannot live and tie. This is not old school hockey. We're soccer. We need a winner. So we bring in the body to break this.
Henry Rowengardner all the way. No doubt.
Wow. Wow.
Letting me down again. First the text at 5:15 on Monday, and now this.
5:14.
Wow. Real quickly, remind me, who was Gina Davis's character in A League of Their Own?
Dottie Henson.
Dottie Henson.
Let me just throw another quick fastball at you. Who would you rather have as your opening day catcher? Jake Taylor from Major League? Dottie Henson? Or, of course, the great Hambino from The Sandlot?
Yeah, I think the answer is Dottie, because I can't project the Hambino enough to know what he's going to be as a full-fledged adult. So that would eliminate him. And I love Jake Taylor. I mean, Major League is an all-timer. He was turns up to be a successful manager as well. But, I mean, physically where he was when we last saw him behind the plate, you can't take him either. So Dottie wins, but not by default. Dottie wins because she's in her prime and can do catches. You know, she's a leader. She's doing splits making catches. She's hitting home runs. It's got to be Dottie.
Yeah, I would go Dottie Henson as well. And she would rake in the majors in today's league. That power,
yeah.
that double gap power. She'd be great with OPS. Give me a Dottie Henson as well. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit Geico.com to learn more. Okay, we had Bob's Bar's favorite Kerrigan call on the show today. Thought he just wanted to make an opening day take, but he took me by surprise after that Woody Johnson story. Merez, can you name the countries in the United Kingdom? And to my surprise, there was more than just England. It's today's epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Friend of the show, I will say friend of mine, Kerrigan is at LaGuardia. Kerrigan, you're on the DA show.
Before I get into some opening day takes, Sean, can you name the countries that Woody Johnson is the ambassador to?
It's the United Kingdom.
The thing, I'm losing it!
The United Kingdom. You mean to tell me that the United Kingdom is more than England?
What did you say?
That is correct. Can you name the other countries?
Wales.
Okay, that's one.
Wow, that's okay. Ireland?
No.
Scotland?
That is another. That's correct. We got one more.
Greenland?
Nope.
Iceland?
At least these are all countries.
These are countries. Largely islands. One more.
Another island?
It is
Liverpool.
It is part of Ireland. Liverpool's a city in the United Kingdom.
I am so confused.
So hold on. I've gotten Wales, I've gotten Scotland, and I've gotten England.
We got one more.
And one more.
And well, you've half
where,
said it already.
Where Rory McIlroy is from.
I half said it already?
Yes.
So it's like Greenland.
It's Ireland.
Yeah.
Oh, the Ire Islands.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
Oh,
no, that's a part of the Republic of Ireland, but please try again.
Oh, the I don't know. I don't know. Give it to me. I don't want to embarrass myself anymore.
Northern Ireland.
Of course.
Hold on here. Hold, and we might have a real-time failure set up. You mean to tell me that there's two countries, an Ireland and a Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom, but Ireland is not?
Sean, there was a period of time of great unrest along these two countries, which we don't have time to go into. But yes, they are, one is, they're both part of the European zone. They use different currencies. There's a lot that goes into it, a religion, fight, but oh, two different countries.
I never heard of Northern Ireland before. How about that? I always, it's, honestly,
it's amazing we went to the same high school, Sean.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
See, that West Babylon Long Island education, not all that bad, Pogues.
Somebody was paying attention.
When he said you're close in the Ireland, and I went with the Ireland Islands or whatever I was going for, it dawned on me. The reason I was saying that is I think in the back of my mind I was thinking about the water island in Game of Thrones. For some reason I brought to real life, and I already forgot the name of that.
The so, Iron Islands.
The Iron Islands. And I think for some reason I just put Game of Thrones in the real United Kingdom, and that's what happened. All right, that'll do it for the DA show today. It is opening day, so enjoy some baseball tonight. Yankees, Nats, followed by Dodgers, Giants. Bogish and I will be back tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Eastern, to break it all down, and Doug Glanville will join the show as well. We thank Pete the Body Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel, James Baccioni as your executive producer, the Wizard of Watch DA, Andrew Kaplan. It's Mraz. Bogish, thanks so much, brother. See you tomorrow.
Let's go, Nats.
Let's go, Yankees, and that'll do it. The mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.